How many of you in the room here today use some type of GPS device? Probably most everybody. We have them on our phones, our smartphones anymore. That was one of the major reasons I stepped into and upgraded into a smartphone was the GPS, so I wouldn't get lost so much. But we also have them. Maybe you have a GPS unit specifically for the car, for driving, that you use separately from your phone. I know I have a little Fitbit watch. It's actually not very little. Part of the reason it's a little bit big is it's got a built-in GPS unit. And so if I ever go biking, which I never do, it can track me. And I can come back and look on Google Maps and see exactly where I went. I have used it for hiking, though. That comes in handy that way as well. And to prove to Gail that I did go for a walk, it's there. My GPS tracked me. It's an interesting system, this global positioning system, GPS. There are approximately 27 to 30, depending on what website you read, satellites that orbit the Earth twice a day. And these satellites weigh between 3,000 and 4,000 pounds. If you go up in a commercial aircraft, you are traveling as high as 7 miles off the ground. That's the altitude, as high as 7 miles or so. Beyond a certain point, the air is too thin for an aircraft to fly, so we don't go up that high. But these GPS satellites, how high do you think they are? If we're up roughly 7 miles, if you're high in a commercial aircraft, take a guess in your own mind, how high do you think these satellites are? Well, 12,000 miles. Is that higher than most? That's a lot higher than I would have guessed. The idea that we're flying at about 7, but 12,000 miles is what I'm reading online about how high these things are. And, of course, they send out signals. Now, anywhere on Earth, you should be able to receive GPS signals from at least 4 satellites. And the idea is these satellites will send out these radio transmissions traveling at the speed of light. And what they send out, I'm not going to try to get super complex with this. I don't understand all the complexities. But it's interesting. They send out their location and they send out the time. That's it. They send their location and they send the time. That little receiver that you have that picks that up, it gets this time and location from at least 3 satellites, and it computes where you are based on the time difference, how long it took that signal traveling at the speed of light to get to that device from where that satellite is. Isn't that amazing? The time, it takes an extra, trillionth of a second, and that means you're on that side of the block instead of this side of the block. But that little thing can determine, based on that infinitesimal bit of time that took a little bit longer, traveling at the speed of light for the signal to reach the device, and so it knows you're a little bit further down the road. It's absolutely amazing. Now, I was watching a program a few years ago, and it was a very interesting program. They were talking about this and other things to do with clocks and how important clocks and watches have been over the years. And it was talking about the atomic clock. Now, the atomic clock is extremely precise, and that's what our GPS devices, that's what the satellites have. All these satellites and our GPS device, everything is all coordinated with an atomic clock, and so all of them send out the exact same time, no matter where they are. And that's how this GPS system can work. They have time on these atomic clocks down to where there's 1 second of error every 30 million years. That's how precise these atomic clocks are. 1 second error every 30 million years. I remember a watch I had that was about a minute or two off every day. I had to reset it. Well, these things you have to reset maybe once every 30 million years. It's absolutely fascinating. But this program I watched was basically the history of time. And I can't find it because Stephen Hawking has a book by the same title, and it just takes over YouTube. So I can't find that particular program anymore. But it was very interesting to learn about how time and the ability to tell time has affected history and our lives the way we know it. I looked online. The official definition of time at one particular website is, it says it's the component quality of various measurements used to sequence events, See, when I think of time, that's what I think of, a sequence of events and the measure of it. It says the it's used to compare the duration of events or the intervals between them and to quantify rates of change and qualities in material reality or the conscious experience. It kind of sounds kind of complicated. We look at our watch and that's what time it is. But scientists and physicists have been unable to fully define time without using a circular definition. It's hard to define time without using the word time in some way. And they don't know what time is made of. I mean, is it made of anything? But yet it affects certain theories in physics, and we don't understand time. I would like today to talk about time, and particularly in terms of our own lives, how well do we use our time? How well do we use our time? Now, I don't intend to get into all kinds of time management programs. There are plenty out there. And I would encourage especially our young people to read a few books on time management because they can be extremely helpful. They have been for me over the years, and ideas on evaluating whether we should spend time on certain things and what things are important for us. I'm not going to get into all the details of the physical, but I would like to talk about the spiritual. Does how we use our time matter spiritually? Is there a spiritual component to how we use our time? I think that how we use our time can affect salvation. How we use our time can indeed affect salvation. And we all use time differently. How we use that time can be the difference between a life filled with happiness and joy and fulfillment, or the difference between a life filled with frustration and just being down about a lot of things because things don't seem to work out for us. How we use our time is a big part of how successful we are in life. We all know that we live in an age, we have just as much time as anybody's ever had in terms of 24 hours in a day. Not that time was always measured in 24 hours, but we have the same amount of time per day. And we supposedly can get so much more accomplished today because of the help of technology. But as we all know, the more technology grows and the more we utilize it, it seems the busier we get. Life, it can just plain be busy. And oftentimes, if you're like me, we can go through the day having done so much, but feeling like we didn't accomplish very much. We're busy. But we look back, and perhaps, if you're like me, I look back and I think, well, why did I spend so much time doing such and such? Usually it's because I misjudged how long it would take. But, you know, that's common, I think, oftentimes for all of us, is we do things. We can stay busy, but sometimes we look back and we say, well, maybe I didn't use that time as well as perhaps I could. There is a saying, time is money. And I've also heard people say, money is time. And I've heard people indicate that if I were rich, I would have more time. But because I'm not rich, I don't have much time. And I can understand a little bit where they're going with that. I mean, if you didn't have to mow your lawn once a week, you could use that time doing something else. So what do? Maybe we hire somebody to mow our lawn, find some young person in the neighborhood that like to have a job. But we save that time. I know in my case, I've usually tried to change my brakes on the cars. And they haven't failed yet. I pray every time I do it that I do it right. But every time I do it, it's a little frustrating. And I'm thinking, boy, if I just paid to have this done, I could be using my time somewhere else. But usually that just means sitting at a car dealership somewhere, wasting time. So I don't know if that would work or not. But there are people who say, well, if I were rich like such a person, I could just have all this stuff hired out, and I would have all this time to do the things I feel is important. And maybe there's a little bit of truth to that. But let's face it, there have been many poor people in this world who have become great successes in life. And they've done the things. They've mowed the lawns. They've changed the brakes. And they still were able to use their time in a way that they became very productive people. So I think sometimes people try to make excuses for not spending their time very well. But anyone can change their life based on how they use their time. And the use of time can be very, very important. God created time. Let's go back to 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 9. 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 9. It's hard for me to imagine life without time. And probably because I'm very practical about it, to me, time is a progression of events. And anytime there is a progression of events, one thing happening before another thing happening, I perceive time. And that's, perhaps that's too simplistic for some of the physicists, but that's just simple old me. It's the way I see it. And but I can't imagine time before time. I can't imagine a time without time. But 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 9, it says, "Who has saved us and called us with a holy calling, not according to our works, but according to his own purpose and grace, which was given to us in Christ before time began." Three little words that are quite interesting. Before time began. There was a time before time began. God created time as we know it. He created the stars and the moon and the sun, and he gave us the concept of time. There's another place in Titus chapter 1, verse 2. You don't have to turn there, but it talks about in hope of eternal life, which God, who cannot lie, promised before time began. There was a time before time. It's hard to imagine. And I'm sure that we will never have all the philosophical answers to some of the questions about time. Perhaps it's beyond our understanding. We would have to be spiritual maybe to understand it. But I'm sure there will come a time when we are spirit beings, when we will understand the intricacies of time. But God created it, and God actually created the need for time management and the need for mankind to determine how he uses his time. And he did it back in Genesis chapter 1. If you go back to Genesis 1 and verse 3. Genesis chapter 1 and verse 3. God created the need for time management. Now think about it when we read this verse. It's very familiar. Genesis chapter 1 verse 3. "And God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good. And he divided the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. So evening and morning were the first day." Now, in what way did this require a time management system to be developed by Adam and Eve? Well, when darkness comes, you can't work anymore. He didn't have the flashlights. He didn't have the power that we have today, that we can do things easily after dark. So from the very beginning, Adam and Eve had to begin to reckon how long they had left in the day to do whatever work they were going to do that day. And then darkness came. And then they had to do other things. God created in us the need to sleep. And wouldn't it be great if we didn't have to recharge our batteries in that way? We could just work 24 hours and it would feel like we would get so much more done. And you know what? We would, but we would still be behind. It's the way it is. Life fills the time we have. But God created it so that even within ourselves, we know that we're getting tired. I'm going to have to stop what I'm doing. I'm going to have to rest. It requires us to order how we do what we do and when we do what we do. So God created the need for time management when he created day and night. Exodus chapter 20 and verse 9, God created the need for us to keep track of time. Not just when the sun is up and when the sun is down, but the need to keep track of days. In Exodus chapter 20, verse 9, it's the commandment to keep the Sabbath. It says, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. So mankind would have to count days. Know how many days they have left until they're going to have to keep the Sabbath. So this required keeping time. From the very beginning, God not only created time, but he created the need for us to keep time and manage time. And he expected mankind to do that. Let's go back to Isaiah 57. Isaiah 57 and verse 15. I've often thought about how God views time. You know, can God see the future? You know, these are the kind of questions we sometimes ask. They there's no need spiritually for us to know the answer to some of these questions. And so God doesn't provide the detailed answers for every philosophical question we can ask. But, you know, the Bible gives us what we need to be in the kingdom, what we need to live this life we're in. There are a lot of unanswered questions. But this verse in Isaiah 57, verse 15, gives us a little hint, I think, about something about God and time. It says in Isaiah 57, and verse 15, "For thus says the high and lofty one who inhabits eternity." Let that sink in a little bit. The God who inhabits eternity. What exactly does that mean? I'm not going to pretend to be able to explain the depth of that. Perhaps only God could explain the depth of what that means. But evidently, we can at least glean this much out of it, and that is God dwells outside of the limitations of time. God is not limited by time in the same way that we are. He inhabits eternity. He created time. As hard as it is for us to imagine, he did these things and he inhabits eternity. Yet he works with us as human beings. We live within the confines of time and we're limited by time. And he works with us within those confines. And he works with us within those limitations. Now, again, this idea, well, if God dwells outside of time, can he look forward? Can he see our future? And the way I've always answered that is I don't know whether he can or can't, but I doubt he chooses to. Because if you think about it, it brings in all kinds of ethical, we might call them in our world, ethical issues. If God can look ahead and see that this guy, Gary Black, doesn't make it, I'm going to be in the lake of fire, then he can look ahead and see that in my life, then he can come back and say, okay, what do I need to change in Gary Black's life right now so that whatever happens, so he gets off track, doesn't happen? And so, you know, morally, you might say if he can fix it, he should fix it. And so he changes some things in my life. Perhaps he goes back and changes something about my childhood, whatever. And he looks ahead and I make it. Whew, got that Gary Black in there. But what about such and such a person? I won't name names. We always pick on Gary. Okay, well, I've got to change, and now I've got to do the same with him. And can you imagine that? That means everybody is saved. No one is in the lake of fire. Because God looked ahead, and he figured out, I got to go back and do something else. And God is busy going forward in time, back in time, whatever. I just think that complicates things. If God could see the future, I imagine he chooses not to. He gives us our free moral agency. We make our decisions. He influences us. He guides us toward the right, but we ultimately have the decision to make as to whether we're going to follow him or not. But again, these questions are interesting, but they're philosophical. The Bible doesn't answer the question. It simply tells us in this case that God inhabits eternity. And the indication is he does dwell outside the confines and limitations of time. Anything beyond that is just kind of the way our brain wants to figure things out. We'd love to know the answers, but the Bible just doesn't give us those answers. Let's go back to Ecclesiastes chapter 8. The Bible talks about time in terms of very practical things, not philosophy, not philosophical thoughts, but practical matters. And that's really what we need to focus on in our lives, is how we use the time that we do have. Ecclesiastes chapter 8 and verse 5. Ecclesiastes 8, verse 5 says, "He who keeps his command will experience nothing harmful. A wise man's heart discerns both time and judgment." A wise man's heart discerns both time and judgment. To become wise, we have to be discerners of time. We have to have good judgment with regarding time. And it's a part of wisdom, is to be able to discern time. How we use it. All of us are given the same 24 hours in a day, but not all of us are given the same amount of time in life. Sometimes people, we do have many indications in Scripture where God can bless those who live his way. But then the question comes up, does some people get more time because they please God? Does that happen? Well, I think sometimes, oftentimes, blessings can come. And obviously, when we're wise and discerning and living God's way, we're probably not living the reckless lives that so many people live that cause them to die sooner in many cases. But it's not always true that just because we please God, we have longer lives. There have been many people, very good people, very righteous, very faithful people who have lived shorter lives. And so we can't just say that that person died early because they were a sinner of some kind. No, none of us know how long our lives will be. That is part of how we discern time. It's we realize that we don't know how long we have. A wise person discerns both time and judgment. Let's go back to Psalm 90. Psalm 90 in verse 10 through 12, I'll focus on verse 12, but verse 10 just mentions that the days of our lives are 70 years. And if by reason of strength, they're 80 years. I mean, we have a limited amount of time. Now, for our young people among us, 80 years is a long time. 70 years is a long time away. But believe me, when you get to 65, it won't be. It seemed very short. Everybody here who's anywhere close to that 70 knows, and will tell you as young people, it's short. It's not very long. It goes by very quickly. Part of having wisdom is understanding that point. We don't have much time. No matter how many years we think may be ahead of us, it's not really that long. Life is rather short. It says in verse 12 of Psalm 90, "So teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom." Teach us to number our days. Now, what does that mean? It means to be aware that our life is limited. We don't know how many days before we're no longer living. It could be one, could be 12, could be 1,000. We can't number our days by predicting when we're going to die, but the idea is we realize that we only have a certain number of days, and we don't know how long that is. And that is something that's intriguing to think about. God didn't let us know. He told us in general lifespans would be 70, 80 years, but that's a general figure. None of us are aware. Now, what if God had created us and told us that every one of you are going to live to your exactly 70, then you're going to die on your 70th birthday. And that's the case with everybody. No disease. No children dying, no teenagers dying. Everyone lives till 70. How would we approach time? Now think about it. If you knew that, if you knew how long you had left, and you knew it was a while, you know, it would be very easy to kind of put things off that are important, because we just know we've got time left. But the way God puts it, time in our lives, is we don't know. We don't know if today's our last, and I don't intend to be morbid about it, but I mean, we really don't. And that should, if we're wise, cause us to think, I need to use my time. What if I don't have much more time? What if? I just read an article just yesterday of a columnist and reporter who just found out that he has weeks to live. Many of you probably may have read the same article. And I couldn't help thinking, what if I were in that place, you know, what if I knew that I have weeks? And of course, many people over the ages have come to that place in life and had to experience. Am I ready? Have I used my time? What do I want to do with the rest of my time? Some of you may have seen the movie The Bucket List, where two old guys realize they have a little time left, and one of them has a lot of money, and they build a bucket list, everything they want to do before they finally pass. And it's kind of an amusing situation. But most of us, we just don't know. We just don't know, and that's the way God wanted it to be. We know that we have a limited amount of time, but when we're wise, we take that to heart, and we utilize the time we have. That's part of discerning time. It's part of learning to number our days, is that every day counts. How we spend our time matters. Back in Psalm 39 and verse 4 and 5, Psalm 39 and verse 4 and 5, it says in Psalm 39 verse 4, "Lord, make me to know my end, Now, obviously, he's not talking necessarily about how we're going to end, what the end of our life will be, how that life comes to an end. We just don't know. But help me to know my end. In other words, to be cognizant that there is limited time. It says, and what is the measure of my days that I may know that I'm how frail I am? You know, we are. Even our young people, I remember being young and thinking I had forever. But this life is frail. It's fragile in many ways. It says that, indeed, you have made my days as handbreadths. Days aren't very long. They go quickly. So we learn from the Bible that this principle, that time is important. God created it. He wants us to manage it. He wants us to have wisdom. Part of that wisdom is knowing that we must use our time well, because there isn't much. And the end of our days will come. In many cases, way earlier than we want. So we use our time in a way that is cognizant of that. Now let's go back to Ecclesiastes 3. Ecclesiastes chapter 3. I read a few sermons ago, I read in Proverbs 15, verse 19, where it talks about the lazy man's way is like a hedge of thorns, but the upright man is like a highway. You know, we could go to several scriptures about laziness and talk about how this lazy person wasn't using their time well. And there are many Proverbs that talk about that. And ultimately, it's talking about time, how we use the time, whether we are productive with our time or not. The Bible is very sometimes humorous, as we know, in terms of the lazy person, the person who's not using their time in a productive way. And it's very corrective to us in terms of not being lazy. But there's also balance. You know, I don't want to give the impression in this sermon that if you're not being ultra-productive every minute of your life and working on something every minute of your life, that you are somehow displeasing God. There is a balance, and we learn that here in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 12, where it says, I know that nothing is better for them than to rejoice, to do good in their lives. And also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is a gift of God. So yes, there is a time to labor. And God expects us to be able to eat and drink and enjoy the fruit of that labor. So playing is not a sin. Enjoying, going out for an enjoying time, a joyful time, I get it right here, enjoying ourselves in some way with friends and playing is not a waste of time. But there is also a time for labor. And so we find that balance. And when we are laboring, the question is, are we doing the things that we really should be doing? If our time is that valuable, are we using it well? How many times do we say to ourselves, I just didn't have time to pray today. I just didn't have time to do the Bible study I wanted to today. And there's certain things that we know are vital to us spiritually that we just sometimes don't make the time for. We don't make the time for it. I want to go through several principles today before we conclude. They are spiritual principles of time management because we see God does these things. And again, we could read a book, and I encourage those who haven't, especially our young people, to read some books. I mean, Stephen Covey's got some great stuff out there in terms of time management, how we choose what we do and what we do not do. We'll talk a little bit about one of those in a minute. But I want to talk about the first principle here that we find. It's a spiritual principle, and that is to set priorities in our lives. Set priorities. And we could also talk about goals. I'm not going to get into all the details in setting goals and the benefits of that, but certainly setting priorities is essential. And that is one of the things that most people fail to do. And it's so core. It's core in our spiritual lives. We know from Exodus 20, verse 3, you shall have no other gods before me. God expects us to set Him above everything. That means there are priorities. That necessitates priorities. We know from Matthew 6:33, seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness. So God expects us to prioritize things in our lives. So many people go through life just doing what they feel like at the time. and not really evaluating priorities. And sometimes it's easy to know our priorities, but not act on them. You know, we kind of know what our priority is, but that's not what we spend our time doing. We don't spend our time focusing on our priorities. Turn over to Luke chapter 12, Luke 12, verse 34. Luke 12 and verse 34. It's easy to think we have the right priorities in our mind, but in our heart, it's not really the case. And it says in Luke 12, verse 34, that where our treasure is, there our heart will be also. Where is our heart? You know, is our heart in the same place as our mind? In our mind, maybe we know that prayer must be a priority. But in our heart, we've got other things pulling us to do other things in life and keep us away from maybe what we know in our mind to be a priority. Where is our heart? Is our heart truly where it should be? I think when we evaluate that, it helps us to truly examine where our priorities really are, because it's very easy to be misguided in our own mind, to be deceived in our own minds about what our priorities are. Our priorities are demonstrated by how we spend our time. That's where our priorities come. We demonstrate to God our priorities by how we spend our time, not by what we think they should be. And so where is our heart? Where our treasure is, there our heart will be also. Is our treasure really, first and foremost, on spiritual things? Do we make the time for what we know is important? Now, no one is saying we have to pray and study the Bible more than 50% of the day. God doesn't expect that. He knows we have lives and things to do. But the question is, do we spend some time like we ought to in the spiritual things? And what about the things that are truly important in our lives? Even if it be a young person getting an education, learning a good work ethic, learning about life, growing in wisdom, reading the book of Proverbs. You know, we have to make time for these things to prepare for our future, and how we spend that time, even if it's not spiritual things, God expects, it's a spiritual thing to set priorities, even if they have to do with our physical lives. It's a spiritual thing to learn to set priorities. I remember one of the things that helped me years ago was the idea of the four quadrants. I think it's Stephen Covey's four quadrants of, you know, you have things that are important and things that are not important. You have things that are urgent and things that are not urgent. And most of the time, if we live a frazzled lifestyle, we're doing the things that are important and urgent. I got to get it done today, and it's important. But there are also a number of times we spend our time doing things that are not important and not urgent. Now, that's fine. We need our downtime. There's nothing wrong with some time being there. But then there's the other quadrant that's not important but urgent. And he makes the point that that's oftentimes where we spend a lot of our time. It's really not important, but we perceive it as urgent. The phone rings. Well, that's urgent. We got to answer it. We don't know who it is. We don't know if it's a salesman or whatever. But it's urgent. And sometimes we tend to act on those things that are impulsive, that draw us initially to something, and we don't take time and evaluate, is this something I really need to spend time doing? And sometimes it's helpful just to take a step back every time we're about to do something and ask the question, do I really need to go to the store right now? Could I maybe spend my time going to the store and doing some other things? We do this every day. We make these type of decisions. But we have to step back and ask, is this really important? And of course, in the time management thing that I was mentioning, he talks about how if we spend our time doing things that are important but not urgent, that's really where we want to spend a good deal of our time, because that's where we plan. That's where we prepare for things that are coming in the future. We spend time doing things that are important but not urgent. Anyway, again, I would encourage our young people to find some good books on use of time and learn some of those important lessons. But God oftentimes spends his time on what's important, not necessarily urgent. You ever think about that? I just don't imagine God running around up in heaven saying, oh, you know, I got to get this done today or this is going to fall apart. Well, I better get this done. I forgot about that. You know, oh, this is going to be a stressful day. I got so many urgent things to do. I just don't envision God doing that. In fact, sometimes I think we expect God to act on what's urgent because it's something we want. But God is acting on what's important. For Him, sometimes it's okay that we go through a trial. For us, it's urgent. God, relieve this. You know, take this away from me. But for God, He sees, no, it's important for you to go through this and learn a lesson. So God's thinking what's important. He's not thinking what's urgent. But it's very easy for us to live our lives in what's urgent rather than what's important. I think God sets a good example for us. Do what's important. Evaluate what's important. Set the priorities and live those priorities. Point number two is, again, something that God does very clearly. Take time to plan. Take time to plan. God does this. If you go back to Revelation chapter 13, it's just one of the places. There's a couple places where it mentions this. Revelation chapter 13, verse 8. Talks about a time when all who dwell on earth will worship Jesus Christ. It says, whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb. It says, of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. And, of course, we read that. We read in Ephesians 1, verse 4, that He chose us before the foundation of the world. In other words, God had planned out what He's going to do before He even created it. Everything was already planned out. He already had the plan of Jesus Christ dying for our sins before Adam and Eve were ever created. He knew the plan, and He's working the plan. But he planned it all in advance. Let's go back to Proverbs chapter 21. Proverbs chapter 21. Proverbs 21 and verse 5 talks about the importance of us making plans. It says in Proverbs 21 verse 5, the plans of the diligent lead surely to plenty. But those of everyone who is hasty, surely to poverty. I won't ask the question, how many of you have been hasty? I am known for being hasty at times. Gail chides me, and I've mentioned it before, she chides me sometimes, I will leave to go somewhere and I don't know how to get there. I'll figure it out. I think I know the vicinity. And, you know, us guys, we like to challenge ourselves that way. We think we can figure it out. And she says, no, I don't want to waste time figuring it out. You figure out what you need to do. Pull over. Figure out where you need to go. That's why I got a GPS now. But I will start things sometimes and not have planned it. I've learned my lesson because I've wasted so much time. And it frustrates me when I didn't stop, take time to plan what I was going to do. Now, I was very proud of myself the other day. I had a small drywall project. It was only about 10 or 12 feet of drywall. And I had been putting it off forever. But since I'm giving the sermon, I decided I better get on to that. No, actually, it was before I decided the subject. But anyway, I'm looking at this wall. I'm going to drywall. And I sat down with a piece of paper. And I looked at the wall. I imagined everything I'm going to need to do. Oh, yeah, I need this tool. So I ran, got that tool out of the garage, brought it in, set it down, thinking about how I'm going to do that. I need something else. I run down to the basement, grab that, put it all together. I'm getting all the tools that I need, everything together. I list the things I need to buy at the store. I figure out how much drywall I need. And I forgot about a couple of things that I wrote down the list I wouldn't have thought of had I just gone to the store. And that's sometimes what I would have done, gone to the store. Now, what happens? All of us guys who've done those kind of projects, you go to the store five times because you forgot something else. And the project takes five times longer than it should have because you didn't plan it. Now, all of us know this. I was happy with myself that I did it because I know it, but I don't always do it. But planning is so important. When we take time to plan, it really helps things go well. And we learn that from this proverb. The plans of the diligent lead surely to plenty. Now, of course, a drywall project is nothing. But planning our lives, young people, take time to plan your life. Where is it you want to go? Now, those goals may change in time, but have those goals. How are you going to get there? What is your plan? How are you going to execute it? Seek counsel, seek advice. Planning is essential. God is the ultimate planner. And it's a spiritual principle, therefore, that we plan and we think about what we need to do. And let's consider James chapter 4 in this planning stage. James chapter 4 and verse 13. Here we have somebody who did have a plan, but was chastised because something was left out of the plan. James chapter 4 and verse 13. It says in James 4 verse 13, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we will go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell, and make a profit." Now that's a plan. Technically, it's a business plan. We're going to go, we're going to buy and sell, we're going to make a profit, we've got this plan, and it sounds really good. But it says in verse 14, "Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away." Now think about that statement for a second. How many of you have maybe a teapot, a cup of tea in the morning, and you see that steam come out of that pot, it comes out? And what happens, just a second or two, it's gone. This is the way God describes our life. It comes out, appears, and then it's gone. It's very short. And that's the wise way of thinking about life, is realizing that we have to use our time wisely, because it's like a vapor. But notice what he goes on to say in verse 15. "Indeed, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. But now you boast in your arrogance. Such boasting is evil." The point of the verses here is to say that when we plan, it's good to plan, but we must consider the will of God. We must consider, is it God's will? Is it God's will that we do this? And I think a secondary aspect of this is, as we said about the vapor, we don't know for sure how long we've got. We can't just accept that, you know, a year from now I'm going to do such and such. We may not have that much time. So there's a couple of lessons we learn from this, but the big one is, do not be boastful and arrogant in terms of our plans. We always accept that it must be God's will. And we go to God. We say, "God, this is my plan. Is this your will? You know, make known to me your will. I want to plan my life in accordance with what is your will. So guide me in that." And acknowledging him. But we have to make our plans. Again, spiritual must always be first. We must prioritize. But we must, in setting these priorities, make plans, just as God does. Point number three is to work the plan with God's help. There's a couple things there, because oftentimes it's easy to lose focus. To start on something, lose focus, and begin on something else. And that's something we'll get to in a little bit, but we have to work the plan. We have to work the plan with God's help. Notice in Proverbs 16, verse 9. Proverbs 16, verse 9. We set our priorities, we make our plans, and we work the plan. How many times have we, perhaps, I know many people, including myself, do this, we can make a plan but not execute it. We get distracted. Other things come into play. But we must work the plan and do it with God's help. Proverbs 16, verse 9, "A man's heart plans his way." Now that's good. It says, "But the Lord directs his steps." You know, if we don't make plans because we don't know what God wants, then God can't direct our steps. If we're sitting still, God can't direct which direction we go. We need to be moving so that God can direct us. But sometimes, oftentimes I don't know what I want to do. I don't know what my goals should be, so I'm not going to do anything until God shows. Notice he says, the man's heart plans his way. We have to plan, but God will direct as we go. Ask for him to direct our plans and direct our steps. Proverbs 3, verse 5 and 6. One of an often quoted favorite verses of the Bible, Proverbs 3 and verse 5 and 6, where it talks about trusting in the Lord with all your heart and leaning not to your own understanding. It says, "In all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your path." You know, that is a promise. If we acknowledge him, he will direct us. But again, it's not just about making a plan and leaving God out of it. It's making our plan and involving Him, but then asking for Him to bless what we do. And that's very important as we work our plan, to realize that God, if we're doing His will, He can help us to be productive and to be successful. Go back to Genesis chapter 39. Fascinating example of this in the life of Joseph. Joseph, of course, his brothers had turned upon him, sold him into slavery. Everything was going bad. But God had a plan. And God's plan was still on track. Even though things were going so badly for Joseph at the time, he was purchased by Potiphar. It says in verse 1 of Genesis 30, Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, the officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. And notice verse 2, and the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man. Think in terms of, if you want to be successful, desire for the Lord to be with you. It says, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian, and the master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand. Notice the master, this Egyptian, realized that it was God who was helping Joseph to prosper, that was helping Joseph to do well at whatever he set his hand to do. It was God who did that. And even this pagan Egyptian recognized that. We might ask ourselves, how much do we acknowledge God in our success and what we do in life? How much do we acknowledge that it's His hand helping us that helps us be productive? This Potiphar really recognized that the Lord was with Joseph, and the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. And of course, he promoted him. And the promotion, according to Scripture, came because Joseph, the Lord was with him. So we can learn a lesson from that, and that is to work the plan, but with God's help. It's so essential in terms of how we use our time to realize that we want God to be with us. We start the day, we may plan the day, but ask God to bless what we do. Otherwise, without God's blessing, things go badly. We spend 3 times the time we should on a project that should have taken just a little bit of time. Because maybe we didn't ask God to bless our hand. And so we end up taking more time than we needed. And the fourth point, very quickly, is finish what we start. That is a spiritual principle, because God does that. God doesn't start on us and then just forget about us. We are a project. We are God's children. He's called us, He's working on us, and He doesn't walk away and forget about us. He finishes what He starts. Jesus Christ Himself said in John 17, verse 4, I have finished the work you have given me to do. He was a man who finished what he started, who focused on that work. And think about it with Jesus, the example of Jesus Christ. It says He fulfilled every single prophecy that He was supposed to fulfill. There were a lot of them. But He knew what He had to do. His priority was to do the will of the Father and to fulfill everything that was written that had to be accomplished of Him, and to preach the word that His Father gave Him. And that's what He did. He worked the plan with the Father's help. But He didn't stop and go do something else. He finished what He set out to do. Notice Philippians chapter 1, verse 6. It's very encouraging for us to know that God is this way. God doesn't just start on us and walk away, get focused on something else, lose His focus on us. It's easy for us to do that in life, but God doesn't do that. Philippians chapter 1 and verse 6 says, being confident of this very thing, that He who has begun a good work in you will complete it until the day of Jesus Christ. God will keep His focus. And that's a spiritual principle of time management that we can apply in our life, that we can keep our focus, finish what we start. It is an attribute of God, and it is an attribute that we should have. So again, these principles, maybe you can find some of them in time management books, but that wasn't what I wanted to focus on. I wanted to focus on what is God like when it comes to time? What principles can we learn from Him? And there are many more, but we won't go there today. Let's go ahead and begin concluding then. Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 15. A very important verse when it comes to how we view time and viewing time in a wise way. Ephesians 5, verse 15 says that, see that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise. Now, what is one of the ways that we walk with wisdom instead of as fools? Well, it says in verse 16, redeeming the time for the days, because the days are evil. Redeeming the time for the days are evil. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean there that time is evil or that every day is horrible when it says the days are evil. The idea is that time is not on our side in many ways. Time is running out. The days are evil. We only have so much. We can't look at time and say, hey, can you give me a little bit more? Nope. Won't give us more. We have what we have. It says redeeming the time. Barnes' note says that redeeming the time means to rescue or recover our time from waste, to improve it for great and important purposes. So to redeem our time means to rescue it. The idea of redeeming means to buy back. It's actually the same word used that Christ redeemed us. We're told to redeem the time, to buy it back. Now, the implication is this is time that someone has taken from us or something has taken from us, and we are to buy it back. How do we get back the time that has been taken? Well, someone hasn't literally walked up and taken our time. We've allowed our time to be taken by all kinds of things. And we have to take a step back and say, how can I redeem my time? How can I take back the time that's been taken for this and that and the other thing that's not important? And how can I make use of that time in a way that really is important? That's part of what it means to redeem the time. The other aspect involved here is the spiritual one. And that is, take our lives seriously. Take our spiritual lives seriously, because we only have so much time. We need to use what we have to make sure we are on track. Think about the parable of the 10 virgins. 5 of them thought they had time. The whole point of the parable, they thought they had time to do it, to get what they needed to get. They would have time to get the oil. And what happened when the bridegroom came? There was no time. And we see that principle over and over, that we must be ready now because there won't be time. If we are just waiting until some day in the future to get serious spiritually, we won't have time. That's what the Bible clearly tells us. Let's go back to Romans 13 to conclude. Romans 13. Again, the most important thing we can do with our time is make sure that we are ready for the return of Christ. We are ready to stand before Jesus Christ and answer to Him. That is the most important thing we can do, is to make sure we're ready to stand before our Lord and Master every day. Romans 13 and verse 11. It says, and do this, knowing the time, that now is high time to awake out of sleep, for now our salvation is nearer than when we first believed. And the night is far spent, and the day is at hand. Therefore, let us cast off the works of darkness, and let us put on the armor of light. I like that scripture because it's very motivating. Now is the time to wake up. If there is any area in our lives where we need to change or wake up, now is the time. Now is the time to be ready to stand before Jesus Christ. So time is very important. And again, we can talk about time management, but God created time. God created the need to manage it. God created the need to keep track of it. And God gives us only so much. A person who is wise lives their life recognizing that fact and recognizing how valuable time is. And therefore, what we do during that time is so important. So let's be wise and understand the importance and value of time and how we use it. And let's be wise and let's be redeeming the time in our lives.